psychology, philosophy, and spirituality. One morning, Sri Bhagavan quoted from a journal the following sentence: "Where psychology ends, philosophy begins," and added his own remark: "Where philosophy ends, spirituality begins." I was asked to translate into Telugu an article on Sri Bhagavan by his English devotee, Major A.W. Chadwick. It was suggested that I might try to put the same ideas in Telugu poetry. In the inspiring presence of Sri Bhagavan, I composed 16 verses in 2 hours, and at the instance of Sri Bhagavan, I read them out in the hall. When I came to the 15th verse, which stated, "On this occasion, Shashti Purti, as we gather at the feet of Sri Bhagavan, we should neither discuss philosophy nor estimate our individual progress in spirituality, but simply pour our hearts out for his gracious condescension in living with us and befriending us these 60 years. My voice choked with emotion and failed. Sri Bhagavan also shed tears. With great difficulty, I somehow completed the reading." A. Devaraj Mudaliar, a prominent lawyer and intimate devotee, asked how Sri Bhagavan could observe distinction among his devotees. "For instance," added Sri Mudaliar, "shall we be wrong if we say that Subramanya is shown a little more favor than others and is made to act as a high priest of the order?" Sri Bhagavan, smiling, replied, "To me, there is no distinction. Grace is flowing like the ocean, ever full. Everyone draws from it according to his capacity. How can one who brings only a tumbler complain that he is not able to take as much as another who has brought a jar?" At this time, I was blessed with the rare good fortune of working with Sri Bhagavan in the kitchen. Hours of duty were between 2:30 a.m. and 4 a.m. Sri Bhagavan would come punctually at 2:30 a.m. and first spend some time in cutting vegetables with workers and devotees. Then he would enter the kitchen and prepare sambar or chutney for breakfast, and occasionally some extra dishes also. At first, I was an ignoramus in the work. As I saw Sri Bhagavan perspiring profusely near the oven, I tried to fan him, but Sri Bhagavan objected. I stopped, but as his attention was engrossed in work, I gently repeated the fanning. Sri Bhagavan, turning to me, laughed and said, "You want to do it on the sly, but you do not even know how to do it effectively. Let me teach you." So saying, he held me by the hand and taught me the proper way of waving the fan. Oh, how I thrilled at this touch and thanked my ignorance. From the kitchen, we would adjourn to another room for grinding the mixture. I did not know at first how to hold the pestle and grind. Sri Bhagavan placed his hand upon mine and turned the pestle in the proper way. Again, what a thrill! How blessed was my ignorance! After the work was finished, Sri Bhagavan would take out a bit from the dish, taste a little of it, and give us the remainder to taste. And sometimes, when our hands were unwashed, he would himself throw it into our mouths with his own hand. That would be the climax of our happiness. Then he would hasten back to the hall and lie reclining on the couch and appear dozing as the Brahmins arrived for Parayana. Squatting so close to Sri Bhagavan, chatting and joking with him and partaking of the fruit of his gracious labors, what a privilege and good fortune! The work with Sri Bhagavan had its rigors as well as its pleasures. Though Sri Bhagavan was all mercy and grace, he was at the same time a strict disciplinarian. He would not tolerate the least sloppiness. Everything must be done to perfection. Nothing should be wasted or spoiled. He would demand full attention and implicit obedience to his directions. Each one was allotted a duty, and he must take his cue from the mere look of Sri Bhagavan. My duty, for instance, was to supply salt and water, and whenever Sri Bhagavan glanced at me, I must bring either of the two, understanding the need. We used to wake up at 2 a.m., finish our ablutions, and be ready before time to report for duty. Once, however, I was late by 5 minutes. The work was already going on. Sri Bhagavan, tasting the preparation, said that salt was a little in excess, and turning to me, he added, "Since you were absent, I thought of you at the moment of adding salt, and that is the reason for this excess." That was Sri Bhagavan's way of reprimanding me for unpunctuality. Another time, the sour ingredient was slightly excessive. Sri Bhagavan, tasting it, joked and said, "Acidity is the effective remedy for pitham, giddiness. Since most of the people who come here are more or less giddy, this preparation will do us all a lot of good." My two daughters, 9-year-old Lalita and 5-year-old Indira, came and stayed in the ashrama for a few days. Lalita was Sri Bhagavan's old favorite, and Indira was a fresh entrant into his favor. As usual, Sri Bhagavan asked both the children to sing and dance in the hall. Indira would respond readily, but Lalita, having grown by now into a little lady, needed much coaxing to commence her performance. Sri Bhagavan said, "What, Lalita? I never asked anyone for anything, but now you have made me seek your favor. Look at Indira. She is a good child. Do emulate her example." So, both the girls sang and danced together, while Sri Bhagavan sat up and looked on, beaming with gracious pleasure. This entertainment became a daily feature of Sri Bhagavan's darbar during the children's brief stay. One evening, Lalita, having had her meal early, left with the ladies for town. Indira, now remaining alone, turned to me and complained of hunger. Sri Bhagavan at once took note of it and severely reprimanded me for delaying to feed the child. He said, "What is your meditation worth if you neglect to serve your child?" Such was his abounding grace to children. "Why can't you be like me?" Another night, Sri Bhagavan graciously inquired about my son-in-law's health, which had been causing anxiety for some months. After hearing my tale of domestic cares and worries, Sri Bhagavan looked me full in the face with utmost sympathy and spoke in melting tones, "Why can't you be like me? You know how I was when I arrived in Thiruvannamalai. There was a time when I went round the town begging for food. In those days, I was observing silence. So, I would pass down the street, halting for a moment in front of a house, and gently clap my hands. If there was no response, I would pass on. Whatever food was thus got by me and other associates, we would mix into one mass and take a morsel each. That we ate only once a day. Now, you see what changes have come outwardly, what buildings have been raised, and how the ashrama has grown all round. But I am ever the same. Only the sun rises and the sun sets. To me, there seems no other change. So, through all the vicissitudes of good and evil, you be like me, and whenever you are prone to depression and melancholy, you remember me. These gracious words of Sri Bhagavan have been with me ever since and protect me as a talisman against all the ills of life. The ashrama was very busy with preparations for the Kumbhabhishekam of the mother's shrine, which was to be celebrated during the third week of March 1949. With the conclusion of the Kumbhabhishekam, our happiness too seems to have concluded. Shortly before the function, a small growth on Sri Bhagavan's left arm was removed surgically. Shortly after the celebration, a new tumor appeared at the same place and grew rapidly. To my inquiry how the tumor would go, Sri Bhagavan simply replied, "As it came, so it will go." On January 14, 1950, at noon, with special permission, I went to take leave of Sri Bhagavan and broke down completely. Sri Bhagavan called me close to him and asked me to touch the affected arm. He graciously consoled me, saying, "Don't worry, it will go. As it came, so it will go. The body itself is a disease which may be termed sthaulyam, grossness. The subtle spirit is encumbered with this lump of flesh called the body. The body is dead even while the man is alive, for it is but insentient matter. Only the spirit gives it an appearance of life and activity. You people talk of the tumor and name it sarcoma cancer. But believe me when I tell you that in my view there is no tumor nor sarcoma cancer at all." Sri Bhagavan's vital energy was being sapped and his body appeared very weak and anemic. However, his face and look did not betray the least trace of pain and suffering, but on the other hand glowed all the more with grace. The last leave-taking, in view of Sri Bhagavan's weak condition, darshan was restricted to the queues in the morning and evening, and except the personal and medical attendants, all others were strictly forbidden to see Sri Bhagavan. So that night I started back with a heavy heart. As I neared the wicket gate of Sri Bhagavan's room, Sri Jaidev Lal, who was guarding it, whispered to me, "Do you want to see Sri Bhagavan?" I replied, "Yes, but there is no permission." He said, "Never mind, get in." And he pushed me in. Sri Bhagavan lay alone, facing the entrance as though he was expecting to see someone. As soon as I got up from prostrating at the doorstep, Sri Bhagavan said, "Come in." As I went in and stood before him, Sri Bhagavan asked me, "What do you want?" I said with streaming eyes, "I want abhayam, security from fear." Sri Bhagavan replied with overflowing grace, "Sari, Ichanu." "Yes, I have given it." Then he added, "Don't fear. As it came, so it will go." At once I felt as though a heavy load were lifted from my heart, and as I touched his lotus feet with my hands and head, a thrill of ecstasy passed through my frame, and I felt like being plunged in an ocean of peace and bliss. That vision of Sri Bhagavan and his gracious words granting me abhayam have taken permanent abode in my being and are guarding me from all life's ills. Be still and know that I am God. One morning in June, Sri Bhagavan, while going up the hill, told me jocularly about the golden jubilee of his advent at Arunachalam, proposed to be celebrated on 1st of September 1946. He said Venkatachalam Chetty had a brain wave. The idea of such a celebration first occurred to him, and since he made the proposal, it seems to have caught everyone's fancy. Thrilled with joy of this news, I composed the following sonnet that very day. At Arunachala, lo and behold, wonders of wonders this half century. Transcendent truth, awareness, ecstasy, itself as living person doth unfold, whose presence all in peace and bliss doth hold, at whose one word or glance all doubts do flee, who, radiant with pure divinity, looks out for souls to save and rightly mold. It is Ramana Maharishi, world-renowned, God-man, Self's Self, embodied love and truth. He, mortals all, in dense ignorance bound, come, seek His grace and see the light of truth. Miss not this rarest chance at any rate, but taste the bliss of Self ere it is too late. Someone asked, it is stated in the scriptures that the Self will reveal itself only to one whom it chooses. Then, what is the use of our effort? Sri Bhagavan replied, the Self will draw unto itself an aspirant only when he becomes introverted. So long as he is extroverted, self-realization is impossible.